Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all you caregivers out there. I'm Dave Nassani, otherwise known as Caregiver Dave, coming to you on our brand new syndicated radio show. Well, it's 1 month old, so it's almost brand new, on Positive Talk Radio, HealthyLife.net, heard in all 50 states and 135 countries. Brief introduction, if you don't know me, if you're just tuning in, I became a caregiver when my beautiful wife Charlene suffered a massive stroke 22 years ago. And she became severely speech impaired, paralyzed on her right side. And I became her caregiver before I even knew what a caregiver was. We went through 2 years of hell on earth. She became angry and bitter because she was grieving her loss. That's understandable. But then I became angry and bitter because I was grieving my loss for the same reasons. We managed to get through our grief without killing each other. And today our love was rekindled. Not today, but back then. After that two-year grieving period, everything is fine now. We have a new normal. Our love has been just rekindled. I guess that's the only word I can find that applies. And we travel the world sharing my message, how to prevent your loved one's illness or disease from actually killing you. So I have a wonderfully amazing guest on this show today, on the Caregiver Dave Show. Author, viral videographer, mom, wife, soon-to-be reality star on the USA Network, Melissa Radke. And if you don't know who she is, just wait. She's on her way to becoming a household name, I believe. I'm going to have her share her story with us. So thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show, Melissa. Melissa Radke, I appreciate you coming. How are you feeling today? You were supposed to be on last month, but you had a little something.
I know. Do you remember the first time that you and I spoke?
Yes, I do.
I liked you instantly.
Oh, thank you.
And I remember that you were gonna start this new show.
Yep.
And that you invited me on, and I wanted to be one of your very first guests.
You are my very first guest because you didn't show up last month. It was good because of the first show, so I did a whole introduction of me. The whole hour was who I am, how I got to be where I am, and where I'm going. So it worked out. It worked out.
I really am your very first one?
You really are my very first one.
Holy cow!
Holy cow!
But I got terribly, terribly sick, and I had strep throat that turned into like this bronchitis stuff in my chest. It wiped me out of commission for about a week and a half or 2 weeks. And
yeah.
So we missed each other, but I'm so glad that we could make it up. Thank you.
Yes, and you have that in common with my wife. I mean, it's not a very nice thing, but she gets bronchitis no matter what bug she gets, goes right down into her lungs, and she just coughs for weeks. And I feel so bad for her, and I feel bad for you too. But you sound great.
Oh, yes, sir. I am on the mend. I am good to go. So I'm ready to chat it up with you.
Well, now, you and I have a few things in common, girl. First of all, I, too, was bullied starting from the 7th grade through the 10th grade, and I still carry those scars with me, as I'm sure you do.
Yeah, so why was the 7th grade so tragic for you?
You know, the only thing I can think of is my childhood. You know, kids don't care about what's cool and what's hip when they're, you know, before they hit 12 or 13. And I had normal childhood relationships. Everything was fine. I remember taking the summer off, like everyone does, coming back to school in the 7th grade, And it was like I was on a different planet. Everything changed. The kids I remember from last year looked different. They were all hip, and they had these clothes on that I'd never seen before, and they had these hairstyles, and they were avoiding me, and they had their own cliques. You know, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I absolutely do. And I just was curious, because the reason I asked is because I wasn't sure how that kind of thing affected a guy as opposed to how it affects a young girl, you know? But it sounds to me like, I mean, it affected you because in that you, it's all these years later, and you still remember it.
Yeah. I had to read this book in my teen years. Well, actually, what helped to get me out of that cycle was all of a sudden one day, the varsity cheerleader said to one of her friends that she thought I was cute. And that was my opportunity. So I approached her, as scared and timid as I was, and I tried to, you know, wear my hair as hip as I could. My father was a workaholic. He was in the gas station all the time. My mother was kind of like Edith Bunker and Rose on the Golden Girls, kind of out there. So I really had to raise myself. I didn't know what cool was. I didn't know what hip was. So I would just try to copy people I saw on TV. And lo and behold, she liked me, and I asked her out on a date, and she said she'd go. And all of a sudden, my whole world changed. Everybody says, oh, my God, look who he's going with. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And all of a sudden, I was cool just because I had this cool girlfriend who just happened to be the junior varsity. And I asked her later, I says, why did you ever go out with me? Because I wasn't, you know, I was kind of awkward. And she says, you know what, I went out with all the football jocks, and they're all jerks. And after a while, I just says, you know, I'm going to try him. I don't know if that was a compliment or not, but it certainly brought me out of my shell. And I still have scars, like I says, because self-confidence scars, because I'm a speaker now, as you are, and the stages I'm speaking on are getting bigger and bigger, and I have a speaking coach, and he says, you know, you have this nervous laugh every time you say something powerful, or you have this deep sigh, and he says, that's a tell for you. It means I don't believe that, you know? It's like we can lie, but our subconscious, our body language never lies. And so if I say something powerful and then I chuckle a nervous laugh like, it's like, no, you don't believe that. And so I'm working on that.
Wow, that's really...
It is. It was deep. I just learned this yesterday, Melissa, because I'm going through... I have a big speech I'm giving... I don't like to call them speeches. I have a big talk I'm giving Friday. And I'm just rehearsing, and he heard me say it, and he pointed that out. And I always knew that I laughed during inappropriate moments, like something bad would happen. Somebody just hit a hammer fall on their head, and I would laugh. And I said, what's the matter with me? Why am I laughing? And it's because I'm just feeling insecure, and I don't know what to do, and it's awkward. And so I'm...
Okay, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
My husband and I just had this conversation.
Really?
Because my daughter, I don't even remember right off the bat what the conversation was, but I was trying to be extremely serious with her. It was a very serious conversation, and I can't...
See, I laughed just hearing that. Isn't that sad?
Yes, and David said, what are you doing? And I said, David, I know the seriousness of this moment, but I can't stop laughing. What is going on with me? Am I losing? Am I cracking under the pressure? And it just, isn't it so interesting, these little gives, these
yes.
little giveaways, you
yes.
know, in our personality, in our subconscious. And I think what I want your listener to know, first off, let's just go ahead and get this out there. My book is not about just what happened to me in seventh grade.
Okay.
But like,
and that book, of course, let's give the title, Eat Cake, Be Brave by Melissa Radke. And
yes.
It's not about cake.
It's not about cake either. So see, I'm really disappointing everyone. but it really is about how we begin, don't we? We begin so early,
right.
Hiding or being embarrassed of and wearing labels that people
yeah.
give us, even in the seventh stinking
yes.
grade.
Yes,
isn't
yes,
that crazy?
Yes. It is
and
crazy.
And here you are, and I are, traveling.
I'm 64, by the way.
You're how old?
64, and I'm still dealing with this stuff.
Oh, see? It's crazy what we wear, what we label ourselves with and wear around for so long. And now here we are traveling and speaking to groups of people, and these telltale signs of insecurity in our personalities are, they're coming out, and they've been there for so long. Why haven't we dealt with it before now?
And I never noticed it. I never knew what it meant. And thank God my coach approaches me, because, you know, the people who love you will tell you if a booger's hanging out of your nose.
Right, that's exactly right.
So, but we're just kind of getting into this before, well, that's good. I love you, first of all. You are awesome, and I just feel like we've known each other for years. And
I do, too. And now that I know you're traveling and speaking, I'm like, Dave, we could grow up. We could do this together.
We could do this together. Well, the second thing we have in common is that we both did some business in Nashville, very close to Belmont University, and we both left town crying.
Okay, well, so what was yours? Tell me yours.
Well, back in 2008, you remember that terrible time, don't you?
Yes,
when the economy crashed. I was invested in all the wrong things. I bought an apartment building right between Belmont University. It was a 54 unit. And right between the projects, you know, where people shoot each other and they die. And it was one of those transitional properties. And right after I bought it, this developer wanted to come in and bulldoze the place. And I would have made $200,000 profit on it. And I says, wow. First, I thought that I was an idiot for buying it, because I get in there and the guy lied to me. The rents weren't really coming in like he said they were. And half of my tenants were running crack houses. And so I says, oh, my God, God, why did you let this happen to me? But, you know, I had to deal with it. So I immediately put card readers on the fence. I put security cameras. You know, I did everything that needed to be done. I evicted half of the tenants, which meant now I have a huge negative cash flow. But it was huge anyway, because they weren't paying their rents. The others were Section 8, so the government sent me checks. And I tell you, my sale fell through the shopping center, because the news kept saying, oh, now the second shoe is going to drop, you know, and all hell was breaking loose in the economy, and he lost his anchor tenant, and I lost my deal, and I started chasing the price down and down and down, till I finally had to give it back to the landlord, and I lost a big chunk of equity. And so that started a domino reaction of me almost going bankrupt, almost losing my home, almost losing my business. And my wife, bless her heart, she was there, because she's the one who said, don't do it. And she could have just said, I told you so, but she was just sweet. And I was just praying, Lord, I can live in a cardboard box, but please, my wife's been through so much. Don't take her home away from her. Make a long story short, 10 years later, I'm totally recovered. I'm in zero debt. And I don't know how God did it, because I know a lot of better people than me, smarter people than me, holier people than me, who are still going through that stuff. And so I accept the favor of God. And that's what favor it is. It's undeserved, and I don't deserve it. But I'm grateful.
Who does? Show me one person that does deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds to me like if that happened to you in 2008, and I moved out of town at the beginning of 2009, then we both left with our tails tucked between.
Yeah.
I
left right about it in 2009. Look, we're living in this parallel world, and we didn't even know each other. Isn't that amazing? It was meant to be.
It was. But so far, the only thing that we found in common, Dave, are really crappy things.
Yeah, it's true. I'm sure if we dig deep enough, we can find something good. Well, let me get to my questions, or we'll just have fun just shooting the breeze here.
I know.
So, but I do have a love for Nashville, because my cousin lives there. I'll even mention his name, Mark Maxwell. He used to work for Word Records here in L.A. Then everything moved to Nashville, all music, not just country. And so he heard from God that he was supposed to quit his job at Word, which seemed insane at the time. But he listens to God, and he was supposed to go to law school. Can you imagine going to law school at 30 years old? But everyone said, are you sure it's God? His wife said, are you sure it's God? Well, he went. He finished law school. And while he was in his first year of law school, Word started downsizing and fired everybody. So, you know, God knows what he's talking about. Now he's a very, very successful entertainment attorney in Nashville. He works out of his house, and they are very, very happy.
Well, Okay, so here's the weird thing. So you're telling me about your cousin, Mark Maxwell, worked for Word Records, went to became an attorney at 30. My husband graduated from Belmont. He graduated with a music business degree. He was an intern in the Christian music industry, and at 29 years old, started law school.
Oh my!
And right beside me, and he and was an entertainment attorney in Nashville, and is standing right beside me, going, "I know Mark Maxwell."
And he's a great attorney, isn't he?
Isn't this just the weirdest thing? Honestly, how could you ever have a better guest on your show than me right now?
Well, I just leave it up to God. You know, I'm the dummy. He just tells me what to do, and I obey.
I just thought that was so weird. David's listening, and he's like, "I know Mark Maxwell."
And guess what Mark does? I mean, he's an attorney, but guess what he also does in his spare time? He's a professor at Belmont University. The guy who's amazing, who writes all the music. Oh my gosh, I hate it when I can't think of an obvious name. It'll come to me. But he teaches a class in Bob Dylan. He teaches a class in Bob Dylan. Is that unbelievable?
Oh wow!
Because Dylan, I mean, has done it all, right? He's gone from one genre to the next. He became a born-again Christian. Then he moved from there. I mean, and you can learn a lot from Bob Dylan.
That's exactly right.
And he just did a talk on TEDx about networking is... Oh, darn it. My terrible memory. You can look it up. Google it. Mark Maxwell, TEDx. And I just got invited to speak a TEDx talk at the end of November at a women's conference. It is wonderful. I'm so I applied a year ago, and they turned me down, and I just put it out of my mind. But then they sent me a letter saying I didn't even know they hung on to it. And so I'm excited about that. Anyway, your first question. Jay, do we have time for one question before the break? Okay. Now, believe it or not, there may be some people out there who may not know who you are or how big and famous you are or will be. And are about, I would say, tell us who the real Melissa Radke is and why did God put her on this earth? I think, try to do that in 2 minutes.
You know, the interesting thing is you ask me who the real Melissa Radke is, and the truth is I'm learning every single day. I guess I assumed that we got to a certain age and we knew who we were.
Mm.
But I find that the seasons bring out something different in me. They bring out different joys and different fears and different pleasures and different anxieties. I'm constantly learning and developing. I'm nowhere near where I want to be, but I'm ever evolving and trying so hard to follow God's plan and purpose for my life, which I believe that every person is born with. I am a mom who's probably messing that up 90% of the time. I'm a wife who's probably messing that up as well. I'm a Christian. I'm a faith believer. I'm a daughter and a friend. And I'm really not excelling at any of those, but I'm busting my butt at all of them. And for that, right there, I'm proud. I'm a big mouth. I'm super creative. And I'm full of hope. And I am an advocate. First and foremost, I believe in justice for all, and so I'm finding that that's a new part of me that I never discovered, and I'm discovering that and learning it as I get older. So, you know, I'm a woman. I'm complex. You ain't got time. You ain't gonna do it.
And you are a survivor.
I am. Yes, I am. I'm a survivor of pain and guilt and shame and loss, and I've lost a child. But I've gained, I can honestly say I've gained more in my life than I've lost. But that's due to God.
Well, you have a lot in common with caregivers. My audience are burned out caregivers, as you know. But there's so many overlapping things. And your life, I mean, I would be surprised if you weren't a caregiver or who never cared for anybody. Have you ever been a caregiver?
No, you know, I haven't. And in fact, I find that there is that part of me that your caregivers have, that innate, whether they wanted to have it or not, that they have to have a nurturing side of them, that has actually not, that doesn't come easily for me.
Mm.
In fact, I was scared when I became a parent that I could even do it because I was never super maternal or a natural care. You know, I wasn't naturally that way.
Well, really, all parents are caregivers.
Do what now?
All parents are caregivers in a way.
All parents, yes, yes, yes.
They don't have to be special needs kids, although one guy told me, yeah, I think my kids are special needs, but they're not, but they sure feel like they are.
Right. I know that all parents are. It just was never something that came naturally for me. But I do realize now, oh, wait, I always had that in me. You know, I'm discovering it more and more and more. But like, I take your situation, for instance, with your wife. I've never been in a situation like that where I've had to be a caregiver. But, yeah, I got two kids, and they keep wanting to get fed, so I'm
You know, your book and your story is almost identical to what caregivers struggle with and you know, what they're going through, either growing up or right now or caring for an unappreciative loved one. So give me your comment on that. We've got about 60 seconds, then we've got to take a break. Your book.
What was the question?
Your book is almost identical to what caregivers struggle with and going through. You know, your story. A lot of caregivers have a lot of baggage. And it comes out in the caregiving situation. So now you have 30 seconds. We can talk about it after the break. All right. Well, don't go away. We'll be right back with Melissa Radke.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words by Dave Nassani is the book that helps you overcome and perhaps even prevent the hardships associated with strokes. Dave takes you on his journey and experience with his own wife, Charlene, a stroke survivor. This book tells you everything about strokes to help you and your loved ones survive without making costly mistakes that may save a life or a brain from irreparable damage. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. The book is available on Amazon.com or order it from fine bookstores everywhere.
Okay, so you have a couple of days off, and you're planning to get away from stress. You may be planning to go across the world or even taking a staycation around town. Well, Hotels.com can get you a room in over 158,000 hotels, 60 countries, for 50% off. That's reducing stress already. Plus, collect 10 nights, and you'll get one night free. And there's no cancellation charges, no change fees. For the best deals, even last-minute deals, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Hotels.com.
Guilt, fear, loneliness, burnout. These are just some of the things caregivers feel. But now there's hope. CaregiverDave.com is a membership website with an understanding community designed around supporting you. With a little perspective, planning, and practical help, you can become a thriving caregiver. Start by visiting CaregiverDave.com. Get weekly calls, practical solutions, and free resources. Plus, when you sign up, you'll get a 30-minute coaching call free. Don't wait. Go to CaregiverDave.com and join now.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Reclaim your caregiver sanity with Dave Nassani's book, It's My Life Too. Caring for someone with an illness or condition who is expected to live for a relatively long period of time is a specific and unique challenge. This book pinpoints the needs and strategies a caregiver must do for themselves in order to survive, thrive, and make caregiving a rewarding, gratifying experience. So get your copy of It's My Life Too today, or buy one for your special caregiver. It's My Life Too is available at Amazon.com and Caregiver Dave.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret. Now you do too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
And we're back with the Caregiver Dave Show. I'm Caregiver Dave, Dave Nassani, and I have an amazing guest on, if you just tuned in, Melissa Radke, author of Eat, Cake, Be Brave. And this book, believe it or not, has nothing to do with cake, even though the cover has a big old piece of cake there with Melissa holding it. Melissa, let's talk about your book a little bit.
Okay.
What What enticed you to write it, and did you know you were a writer, and did it end up the way you thought it was going to end up?
Well, first of all, I have been a writer my whole life. I never, ever thought I would be paid for it. Mm. There is a difference. Have I always been a writer? Yes. Have I always been a paid writer? Absolutely not. In fact, I would do anything to get my words out. I wrote a local news column for a local newspaper for several years for absolutely free, just so I could write and have a place to get my voice heard. And I knew that I loved to write, and I've been a journaler my whole life. And I, you know, whenever the teacher would get up at the beginning of class and say, "You have an essay due," I was never upset by that. You know,
yeah.
I always enjoyed it. But what happened was, the way that the book ever came to be was that I started making videos online and mm-hmm. for social media. And one year, on my birthday, the year I turned 42, actually, I made a video just sitting in my living room. It wasn't professionally done at all. My husband just set up the camera phone for me, and he walked out of the room. And I told a story that had happened one year before, the year that I turned 41. And so I just said, you know, tomorrow is my birthday. I wanted to make this video. I wanted to tell you what the last year of my life has been like. Blah, blah, blah. I proceeded to tell it. And that video went viral. And I will admit that the subject was kind of interesting. It's how that in that year leading up to 42, so the year I turned 41, I made this wish to be brave. Hmm. And I literally lived my life for 12 months. I lived my life saying yes, stepping out of the boat, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
Doing things that scared me and that made me know I was living and all this kind of stuff. And I just simply told that story on a video. And that video went viral, and it ended up on the desk of a literary agent
wow.
who saw the video, contacted me, and said, "Have you ever considered putting that story down on paper?" And I said, "Well, no, but, you know, I've put every other story down on paper. I've written forever and ever." And she said, "Well, let's do it, and let's start working on it." And the next thing you know, she had sent it to several publishing companies, and we had 4 meetings in New York City with different publishers. And I ended up signing just to tell the story of what happened on my 41st birthday. So before people listening to your show think, "Oh, well, look at this girl, you know, made a viral video and now she's got a book out," you know. No, I worked forever. I worked for free forever. I believe the scripture that says we should be instant, in season and out.
Right.
And I believe that when it was time, I was ready because I had worked so hard leading up to that moment.
You're absolutely right. You know, as a young child, I always knew that I was going to do something, that I was going to be famous in some way. You know, I would watch that movie Dave, you know, where he was a lookalike to the President of the United States, and I would look at that movie, you know, as a teenager, and I'd say, "That's me. I could do that. I could do that," and other movies as well. And so everyone thinks that these quote-unquote overnight successes happen overnight, but they don't. You're a 42-year overnight success. I'm a 64-year overnight success. And they don't understand all the hard work, all the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into it. You know, we were talking about caregivers. Let me just tell you a few things that caregivers struggle with. And I want you to see if any of these things grab you. Like, oh yeah, me too. You know, the Me Too movement.
Right.
So they struggle with guilt a lot. They struggle with isolation, with feeling alone, feeling like they're handcuffed to their loved one. They struggle with burnout, with depression, with suicidal thoughts. Are these things that you think are only exclusive to caregivers or other people?
Oh, mercies, no. I think that they are far, far, far more common than we even realize. I think the difference, though, is that caregivers are attached to the person that they give care for. And so their story is a little bit different. And so what I don't want is a caregiver to listen to me today and for them to say, oh, she thinks that she knows. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. I don't think for one second that I know what they're going through. What I know is I dealt with isolation. I dealt with loneliness. I dealt with hopelessness and severe depression and suicidal thoughts. My story was different, but the pain was the same. And that's what I think that we all have in common. We all have pain that is similar. Different circumstances, different stories, different scars. But pain that belongs to each other, that knows each other, that recognizes each other. And one of the things, since this book has come out, through all the book tours, through the book signings, through the public speaking engagements, the people that line up and speak to me and talk to me and hug my neck and I sign their book, they recognize in me the hopelessness that has always been in them. I get that. That's familiar to me. I'm not there anymore, but by the grace of God, but I get them. And I think that's why I don't think that I am becoming a big name today. I'm not a big name by any means, but I don't think my name is getting out there because I'm super funny or super attractive or I'm the next Julia Roberts. People relate to me because they see something in me that they see in themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm not scared of that, you know?
That's because you're brave.
Talk about I have a story, but I'm too embarrassed to share it. Honey, if you don't share your story, I cannot tell you how your life will change. If people would, let me tell you something. The most vulnerable thing about you is the very thing that could heal the world. That's truly what I believe. The story that you are the most scared to tell, trust me, is the story that the world most needs to hear. And so I just put mine on paper. That's the only difference.
Beautifully said. That's amazing. Yeah, you strike a chord with people, you know. Yeah, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I've heard that said. And
right.
You're just...
And I think, too, that I think that we live in a social media age, and I'm not saying anything that you won't hear a million times from a million other guests. We live in a social media age where everything just looks happy.
Yep.
It just looks happy, and no one sees the underlying pain and shame and regret that people live with, the
yep.
despondency that people live with, or the hopelessness. And you know what? I wrote about it.
Mm.
And I will tell you, if they go and buy my book, they're going to laugh. They're going to have a great time. But there are going to be some moments that they recognize, that they go, oh, my word, I feel like I'm reading my story. And that is the part I'm the most proud of.
Melissa, that is well said. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back to that. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Melissa Radke.
Reclaim your caregiver sanity with Dave Nassani's book, It's My Life Too. Caring for someone with an illness or condition who is expected to live for a relatively long period of time is a specific and unique challenge. This book pinpoints the needs and strategies a caregiver must do for themselves in order to survive, thrive, and make caregiving a rewarding, gratifying experience. So get your copy of It's My Life Too today, or buy one for your special caregiver. It's My Life Too is available at Amazon.com and CaregiverDave.com.
Discover the world's largest anti-aging organization, Life Extension. For the best information, vitamins, and supplements, you just can't beat Life Extension. To start extending your life, go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Life Extension banner.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words by Dave Nassani is the book that helps you overcome and perhaps even prevent the hardships associated with strokes. Dave takes you on his journey and experience with his own wife, Charlene, a stroke survivor. This book tells you everything about strokes to help you and your loved ones survive without making costly mistakes that may save a life or a brain from irreparable damage. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. The book is available on Amazon.com or order it from fine bookstores everywhere.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
Guilt, fear, loneliness, burnout. These are just some of the things caregivers feel. But now there's hope. CaregiverDave.com is a membership website with an understanding community designed around supporting you. With a little perspective, planning, and practical help, you can become a thriving caregiver. Start by visiting CaregiverDave.com. Get weekly calls, practical solutions, and free resources. Plus, when you sign up, you'll get a 30-minute coaching call free. Don't wait. Go to CaregiverDave.com and join now.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back. This is the Caregiver Dave Show and my special guest, Melissa Radke, author, videographer, future star of her own reality show on USA Today. Not USA Today, USA Network, right?
Yeah.
Got it. So, and you were interviewed on the Today Show with Megyn Kelly, weren't you, recently? How was that?
Yes, I was. I loved it, too. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
She's a lot of fun, too. So, I want to ask you a question, because you just mentioned all of the things that caregivers are going through that are not exclusive to caregivers. Anybody has these things. And so that makes sense, because before they were a caregiver, they were just a normal person going through all this stuff. And then they're a caregiver. That load is put on their shoulders. And then they wonder why they're having trouble, you know, tolerating their loved one, or you know, they lose their patience, they snap at everyone they meet, you know. Now they're sleep deprived, they're only getting 2 or 3 hours sleep instead of 8. They're not eating right, they're eating a jack-in-the-box, if they eat at all. And so it's just common sense that you've got to, as a caregiver, as everybody really, but as a caregiver, you have to look inward and try to work on yourself, because nobody wants to work on themselves. Oh, I'll do that later. You know, I'll go counseling later. I'll figure out what's wrong with me later. But later never comes. And now you're a caregiver. And if you don't do the later, did you know that 30% of caregivers actually die before their loved ones do? And 60% become sicker than the ones they're caring for?
I mean, that. Know that. That is, I cannot believe that.
It is shocking, but it makes sense. So I want to ask you a question. How long did it take you to feel good about yourself? And what can you tell my burned out caregiver audience that might help them learn from your mistakes that there is hope? I mean, if Melissa Radke, for gosh sakes, can get her act together, and she's still getting her act together, you're not perfect, then what's their excuse? You know, it reminds me of the crabs in a barrel. You're from the South, you probably know this. When one crab tries to get out of the barrel, all the other crabs pull them back in. It's like they're saying, hey, where are you going? You think you're better than us? You're not getting out of here. And they pull them back in. It's like your friends, when you become successful. I'm curious to know if some of your friends started feeling like, wow, look what she did. What's my excuse?
Right. Well, first of all, to the crabs in the barrel, yeah, I got a couple. You know, trust me, everybody listening to you could probably name their crabs. So be careful, careful, what barrel you spend your time in. You know what I mean? What people have asked me, they say, Do you have friends now, Melissa, just coming out of the woodwork now that you're doing the show and you've written the book and you're on all the national appearances? You have just friends coming out of the woodwork you haven't seen in years? And I said, you know what? I have more friends running for the hills than I do coming out of the hills, that are angry or upset or, oh my gosh, is she kidding me? Or, you know, you look around and you realize, wow, there's not quite as many people I thought I could depend on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is true for a caregiver as well. When the going gets tough, the tough you know it.
Yep.
And you'll find that people will leave your life, and you'll feel loss and loneliness. And I feel that a little bit in the position I'm in right now. Like probably some of your caregivers do. Of course, it's different reasons, I know that. But you know, as you were talking, I was reminded of, I don't know that I put this in the book, but I want to share it with you right now. There were so many days, Dave, so many days, that I would wake up and I would force myself to get out of bed. I was so utterly depressed. I was in such a depression that my face had broken out terribly. I had put on a lot of weight. My hair was greasy. I was wearing the same clothes. I would stay in bed for 5 and 6 days at a time without bathing. I was just a mess. And I would wake up and it would be a beautiful Nashville day. Nashville's so gorgeous. They have beautiful weather, all four seasons. It's just a great place. And I would look outside and it would be a beautiful day. And I would say these words. I'm not kidding you. I would say these words. It's only one day. I'll get back in bed, but tomorrow I'll get out of bed. It's only one day that I'm going to lose. It's not that big of a deal. It's only one day. And I would wake up the next day and it would be beautiful. And I would say, you know what? I'm going to get back in this bed because it's just one day. What's one day?
Yeah.
And I would die every single day a little bit more. And I was doing far more dying inside the four walls of my home than I was doing living. And I got to a place, literally, where I had to make a decision if I was going to live or die. I wrote about it in the book. It's one of the chapters. The chapter's called Water to My Chin. And I won't give it away for your listeners. They'll need to go get it and read it.
Mm-hmm.
But I literally was at a place where my next choice was suicide. But the minute that I got out of that water and I decided to live, I decided to fully live. And it would not be easy. It would be hard. It would take work. It would take putting one foot in the front of the other, even on days when I didn't want to. But I did it. And we cannot expect our lives or our situations or our heart or our head to change if we are not willing to put in the work. Yeah. And in the book, I call it not the hard work, but the heart work. Work must be done on our insides in order to affect our outsides. Does that make any sense?
It sure does. You know, you touched on so many things. My wife Charlene was an amazing person before her stroke. She had friends coming out of the woodwork in the church. She was a wedding coordinator. I mean, you wanted something done, you went to Charlene. She was the go-to person. And I'd say she had at least 100 friends that were constantly communicating with her. Guess how many have stuck around after 22 years? Guess.
Oh, my word. How many?
One blessed soul. One.
Oh, my.
You know, they tell us that you have to choose your friends carefully. I mean, we pick out vegetables more carefully than we choose our friends.
That's true. That's a great point.
You know, I did a video on that because I'm at the market with my wife, and she wants a zucchini. I says, this one? She goes, no. I says, this one? She goes, no. I says, this one? She goes, no. I says, my gosh, woman, you're going to eat these things. What's up? And then I got the idea, you know, we choose our vegetables. And so you got to be careful because they say that the sum of the five average of our five friends that we hang around, we will become like. And when I realized that, I had to get rid of some friends because I don't want to be like them. You know, the high school syndrome thing, you know, when the big people in high school, you know this, are the football jocks and the cheerleaders. And then go back at your 10-year reunion. Hey, what are you doing today? Oh, well, you know, I'm kind of unemployed, or you know, I work at McDonald's. You know, it's just temporary. Yeah, I'm driving a cab. You know, it's like being institutionalized in the prison. Remember Dead Man Walking?
Yep,
you know, when a big man in prison who can get you anything you want, he's powerful, nobody touches him, and he gets released, he's just an old bum on the street, and they can't function. Many times they will purposely commit a crime so they can get back in prison because they become institutionalized. They can never be normal again.
Well, you said that about show me, you know, you are the average of your five closest friends. And the other quote I've heard is show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
Mm.
And that's the truth. And I would say to those listening today, there was a time in my life, a very long period of time, when the friends that I had circled myself with wanted me to succeed very little. Very little. And guess what? During that time, I succeeded very little. The friends that I have around me now are maybe not quite as many, but they are true, and they are there, and they are resourceful, and they are full of hope and light and wisdom, and they are truthful with me, and they tell me, hey, been a long time since you've seen your counselor, huh? Perhaps you need to go back and make an appointment. I mean, you know, and that's the kind of friends and the kind of future that I want.
Yeah.
And for those that are listening who are living in a level of despair and hopelessness, and they're depressed, and they're tired, and they're anxious, who is surrounding you?
Yep.
Who is loving you? Show me your friends, and I'll show you your future. Come on. You're right. When we spend more time picking out a great watermelon, picking out our friends, that says something. That says something. We need to be careful there.
Well said, Melissa. Well said, you know. Well, listen, let's take another break. We need a breather after that one. Wow. Awesome. We'll be right back with Melissa Radke.
Guilt, fear, loneliness, burnout. These are just some of the things caregivers feel. But now there's hope. CaregiverDave.com is a membership website with an understanding community designed around supporting you. With a little perspective, planning, and practical help, you can become a thriving caregiver. Start by visiting CaregiverDave.com. Get weekly calls, practical solutions, and free resources. Plus, when you sign up, you'll get a 30-minute coaching call free. Don't wait. Go to CaregiverDave.com and join now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Reclaim your caregiver sanity with Dave Nassani's book, It's My Life Too. Caring for someone with an illness or condition who is expected to live for a relatively long period of time is a specific and unique challenge. This book pinpoints the needs and strategies a caregiver must do for themselves in order to survive, thrive, and make caregiving a rewarding, gratifying experience. So get your copy of It's My Life Too today, or buy one for your special caregiver. It's My Life Too is available at Amazon.com and CaregiverDave.com.
Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words by Dave Nassani is the book that helps you overcome and perhaps even prevent the hardships associated with strokes. Dave takes you on his journey and experience with his own wife, Charlene, a stroke survivor. This book tells you everything about strokes to help you and your loved ones survive without making costly mistakes that may save a life or a brain from irreparable damage. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. The book is available on Amazon.com or order it from fine bookstores everywhere.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
And we're back with Melissa Radke on the Caregiver Dave Show. Melissa, you are an amazing guest. You're just like my girlfriend. Of course, I'm married. Married people shouldn't have girlfriends. How about the friend who's a girl?
Hey, I'll take either of them. I'm fine with either one.
So, for some reason, I have more girlfriends than boyfriends, and I don't know. Maybe I'm just in touch with my feminine side or whatever. You interpret that. But
you're cracking me up.
Do you remember what you said the very first time you heard me? You says, "Oh my God, if I was there, I'd give you a big wet kiss right on the lips."
Put that in context for people. Don't leave them hanging. They're like, "What in the world?" First of all, we were not in person.
No,
I wouldn't have
done
that if I really had to lean over and give a big wet kiss. But you had said something on the air and it made me laugh or something. I'm not even sure what it was. I don't know, but I did say that. You're right. So, see, that's why we can never meet. We can never meet because I'll have to kiss you.
Well, I'm sure my wife would be your best girlfriend as well. So let me get serious again. We were talking about suicidal thoughts. You know, caregivers have a higher incidence of suicide. AARP and the United Hospital Fund did a study of 1,677 caregivers and found that roughly half of them felt down, depressed, and hopeless just within the past 2 weeks. And so with all the suicides in the news lately, I mean, we have to ask, you know, Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade and Robin Williams and Kurt Cobain, whenever there is depression, is suicide far behind? That's the question we need to ask. What's your opinion of antidepressants? Because it sounded like you were going through some kind of clinical depression to you know, imbalance in the brain. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, my story is kind of peculiar there. First of all, a lot of people probably would not understand this. I was in a severe depression. There was no mistaking that. I talk in the book about how I came home from a doctor's appointment. The doctor had suggested that they send me somewhere. My depression got really, really bad before we ever sought out treatment. Therefore, when we did go to the doctor and they ran a bunch of tests, he didn't even talk to me about antidepressants. He wanted to send me somewhere. It wasn't like, hey, wow, David, drive through Walgreens and get a prescription. We had moved to the let's check her in kind of thing. So long story short, I did not end up going anywhere, and I did not end up getting on antidepressants. But you need to know, it is not because I think anything is wrong with them. In fact, some of the people in my family that I love the very most are on them right now. I think that they are lifesavers and hope givers, and I think that they are the answer for a lot of people. And we are past, we are free, my friends. We are free from the days of, oh, and now if you're on antidepressants, you don't talk about that because there must be something wrong with you. We are liberated from the days of, if you see a counselor or a therapist, you know, keep that under wraps because we don't want people to think something's wrong with you. Are you kidding me? Those are bygone days.
Right.
We can now live in the freedom of the fact that antidepressants are available where we can need them, and counseling should be a requirement, especially...
Yeah.
For someone in a situation like you and your listeners, especially for that, you need an outlet. You need someone to listen. Now, people have asked me, but why didn't you take antidepressants? I don't know. I don't know if it's because we were young and we had terrible insurance and we couldn't pay for them. I don't know. I don't remember. The truth of the matter is I was so depressed that I did not even discuss that with David or my parents. If they wanted to get them for me, they could. All I know is I look back and I think to myself that the reason I didn't ever get on the antidepressants was because I needed to walk this out. I needed to fight for my life. But I just, you know, that wasn't the avenue for me, but it had nothing to do with how I felt about them, and probably everything to do with we were broke at the time, and you know. So, I believe that they're necessary, and I believe that I grew up in a home where my parents thought counseling was just, oh my goodness, you just don't talk about that. Oh, people that go see a counselor, now Melissa, that's because they're really, there's something really wrong.
Yeah, stigma.
Are you kidding me? I think that's the wisest decision I've ever made, to see a therapist.
Let me ask you another question. Do you think the anti-bully movement will become as strong and as popular as the Me Too movement going on right now? And after you answer that, do you think that all those former cheerleaders that you went to school with would ever want to be your friend today? Or do you even care? Two questions.
I don't think the anti-bullying movement... Did you say anti-bullying?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I don't think the anti-bully movement will become as big as... that's not the word I want to use. I don't want to use the word as big. I think the anti-bully movement will be powerful for a lot longer than the Me Too movement. I think the Me Too movement is probably just kind of a cultural thing. It's a cultural phenomenon. It's here right now, and it probably will drift away. We actually just had this conversation the other day with someone about the Me Too movement, and they were saying that they felt like it was good because, you know, it's really brought to light a bunch of sexual aggressors. And I just looked at them and I said, you do realize it's done a lot more than that, right? This is not just about sexual aggressors. This is about equal pay for equal work, women's rights. I mean, I think the Me Too movement is a beautiful thing. But I think that we may not hear about it later, whereas I believe anti-bullying, I hope that goes on forever and ever and ever and ever, is my personal feelings on that.
Yeah.
The second question you had was about the cheerleaders that I went to school with.
Yeah.
I went to a book signing in my hometown. We had decided to have it at a restaurant. I could not even get in the restaurant. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that turned out in my hometown. And the fire department had to come by and shut down the entire event. We had to move it. People had to get in their cars and drive down to a bigger venue. It was beautiful. I was so happy. But sitting out in the crowd that night as I shared and as I spoke and as people asked me questions was a cheerleader that I went to high school with. And I saw her out of the corner of my eye. I couldn't miss her because she wept through the entire thing. At the end of the evening, everyone stood in line. She stood in line for a couple of hours, and she got right up to me, and she put her hands on my shoulders, and she said, I didn't know. I didn't know that you ate your lunch every day in a bathroom stall. I didn't know that you were hurting. And I said, would you have done anything differently? And she said, no, I wouldn't have, because I was a mess myself. And I looked at her, and I said, I didn't know. I didn't know you were hurting. And we started laughing at the absurdity, but yet profoundness of that moment.
Yeah.
We never know when someone is hurting.
Yeah.
And we will hear about them later, and we will hear their story, and we will go, what? Are you kidding me? They were broken too? And the answer is always, yeah, they were broken too. And so I just hugged her neck. And no, I wouldn't say at all, you finished that sentence with, or do you not care if you ever, of course. Because the older I get, the wiser I get. And the wiser I get, the more I realize, oh, they were broken too.
Melissa, we've got about 30 seconds left, and I wanted to ask you about your faith. Can you do it in 30 seconds?
Probably not. I'll just tell you, if you spend any time with me, you do not question what I believe in or who I believe in. And everything that I am, that is healthy and happy and whole today and healed, is because of my belief in Christ and my belief in His Son. And I love Him. He's been faithful to me. And even when it has been so hard that it hurts my heart, even when it's been so painful I could barely move, still He was faithful.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Every one of your listeners to know.
Is your website melissaradke.com?
Yes, it is.
MelissaRadke. Buy the book, Eat Cake, Be Brave. This is a beautiful person. Thank you so much for coming on. I love you.
Thank you, Dave. Love you, too. Love
bye-bye. You. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani.